Welcome to the Danny Palmer Show. Does it sound cool if I say it like that? Welcome to the vainly titled Danny Palmer Show. Coming to you live from a coffee shop this week. This is a very big step in the podcast life. I'm thrilled to be here with my guest. She's a hilarious comic that I recently met, and I'm a big fan of hers, Malia Simon. Hi, Malia.
Good to be here.
You're like glad to be here at this coffee shop, you loser. How's it going? How's life?
Oh, life is going.
Life is going?
Yeah.
You've got a nice life going on.
You think so?
I do.
Why do you think so?
Because you're like talented, smart, and funny in New York. It's a good combo, you know?
Always with the flattery, man.
I'm serious. Well, Malia and I met because I saw her at a comedy show, then I watched her perform at the comedy show, and then she killed it, and then I was like, this girl's hilarious, and then she did me and Ryan's show at Black Hat, also killed that, and then also just talking to you, I can tell you're like really smart and like have a very interesting take on the world, and you're just an interesting, smart person. I'm like, you sound perfect for a good pod combo.
That's a great introduction. Thank you. yeah, it was... Your show at Black Hat was really fun the other week. It's such a different like type of show than I'm used to doing. I feel like the first show I did there, I felt like people were kind of just there to like observe all of us comedians being strange. Like they weren't really there to laugh. But then the second show, they were like it. There was a totally different vibe the two times I went.
Oh, yeah, because the first time you went, the room wasn't as full as the second time, right?
Yeah. That was probably mostly it, to be honest.
Yeah, because that room, it's like a small coffee shop. If it's not full, it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult sometimes when it's full. It's a tough room.
Yeah, but I like it still, though. It feels intimate, you know?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You can have, like, great shows when it's a small, intimate crowd. Sometimes the six-person shows are better than the packed rooms, because sometimes the packed rooms are just tight for some reason.
Yeah, you know? True. Yeah.
So what's your story? So you're like... Are you from New York? I feel like we've talked about this, but just to introduce you to the whole...
I'm from California, actually.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, kind of small town in California.
What town?
Arroyo Grande, California. It's like on the Central Coast. Kind of like a mix between hick town and beach town a little bit. And then I came to the city because I went to Columbia. And then... I got a degree in psychology, and then before I finished my degree, I realized I actually kind of don't want to do that at all, and I want to do comedy, so that's what I'm doing now, is I'm pursuing stand-up, and I guess all forms of comedy, but mostly stand-up, and it's funny, people are like, when you say that you went to Columbia or something, people are always kind of like, oh, Columbia, but it's like, well, it doesn't matter now, like, you can't tell that to an audience and impress them, like, it's like, when it comes to comedy, it's total meritocracy, you know, it's just like, if you're funny, you're funny, you know?
Exactly. You can have three PhDs, and if your first joke doesn't hit, you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, exactly. You know? They're judging you only on that, which is, like, terrifying, but also fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What led you to oh wait, first of all, well, your family, I was reading your website and your articles you've written, and as you're describing yourself in your website, you talked about your family being like, oh yeah, they're really thrilled that I got this, you know, expensive degree from Columbia and now I'm focusing on comedy. Is that like a legitimate issue with your family, or
not legitimate, like they don't really care, but I definitely think they would rather me not do this.
If we had our druthers, it's a no.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear.
Why? Because they want you to have like a traditional stable...
Yeah, it's like, it's a risky thing to go after. And it's also just, I'm so new still. I'm sure I don't even know the half of it. But like, I think they get a sense that there's a certain like sleaziness kind of... involved in the comedy world,
like doing podcasts with Danny Palmer.
Yeah, this is their biggest fear.
They're like, you're not this doing today. This podcast.
No, like, you know, there's just a lot of like There's like a little bit of like a seedy underbelly to the comedy world. You know,
100%.
They don't even honestly know the full story of it, but they have some kind of idea, and I don't think that's exactly what they wanted for me.
Right. But there's not like barriers to entry to either performing or like getting jobs in the industry, really. Like, I mean, maybe not like WME or something, but like, you know, one time I had a guy that gave me feedback on my set at a comedy club, and he was like there to watch it, like a bringer show, and he smelled like shit. I'm like, is this the profession that I'm chasing? This guy reeks of shit.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it. I know you meet some of the weirdest people, like in the world, doing this.
Right.
It's just like such a weird combination of people that, like, we've all converged on. We all want to do comedy for some reason, but there's a million different types of people that can be a person who wants to do comedy, and then we like. You put them all together in this one scene, and it's like just the weirdest thing, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, and the hodgepodge is usually more weirdos than less weirdos, you know?
Yeah.
Or like needy, kind of attention seeking.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's like nice, normal people like you in the world too, but there's also a lot of people that just.
Don't you think? I think everyone who wants to do this has like a little bit, a stroke of attention seeking in them. You know?
Yeah. We're definitely the only two people in this coffee shop with microphones.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody else is just exactly. Getting some coffee.
Yeah, you wouldn't like go through, like you wouldn't put yourself through doing stand-up if you didn't like have a little bit of the like attention-seeking drama side of you, kind of,
right.
I think.
Is that a part of your personality? I don't really detect that just from my limited conversations with you thus far, but do you have that piece of you?
I think it's in me, like I feel like I, what like what is it that makes me want to be a performer? Like, you know, like you want eyes on you, and you want, like you know. So like, I don't tend to feel that way, just like interpersonally with people. Like I would prefer to like relate on a different level than that, you know. But when it comes to like stand up, yeah, I think I have like a. There's something, right, that makes me want to, like, perform. It's not a normal quality, really.
Right. Well, what drew you to comedy initially, and then when you got that first, like, big laugh and you performed, is that what was the real drug that made it kick in, where you're like, I'm going to pursue this seriously? I guess I asked you two questions, but what drew you to it initially? Sorry.
I mean, I was a fan of stand-up. I consumed so much of it before I started doing it, and I feel like, I don't know, I've talked to a lot of people who I feel like you go through this phase of, like you want to do it for, like, years before you start doing it. That's what I've heard from people, which was true for me. Like, I was watching it, and I was like, I think I could do this. And I was like, because I just consumed so much of it, I became, like, so literate in it. And I was like, you know, you start, like, just by osmosis, you start to learn, like, kind of how it works, like kind of how jokes are written. And then I started doing it, like I went to an open mic and I was so bad, and like which I feel like that like initial shock of like, oh, this is so much harder than it seems, is like, I don't know, maybe it like most people would realize that and like have to confront that and then just stop doing it. But I think I was, like, I realized I wasn't good, but I was still, like, I still kind of felt like, okay, like, maybe there's potential still. Like, you're always just, like, adjusting your standards to reality, I feel like. And so I was like, okay, maybe, like, I know I'm not good now, but, like, maybe if I worked really hard at this, I could become good. Like, and then it became more of that. And now that's how I feel. Now, I never feel like, I feel like pretty early on you have to let go of your idealism about, like, I'm just going to be great, you know? And, like, that, and how I feel now is just, like, okay, it's just, like, if I work hard at it, I know I'm capable of learning, and I can get better, and I'm, like, I'm so obsessed with, like, the progress now more than anything.
Just seeing, like, incrementally getting writing better jokes, getting bigger laughs, like that kind of process.
Yeah, because it's like, because it's something that, because comedy is something that like I love so much. So like, I care so much about my own production of it being good that like, even, yeah, even seeing like me compared to me getting better is like, it, like really addictive to me, which is like why I keep doing it now, I guess.
Yeah, it's validating, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like what you said about that you made you focus on, you recalibrated your expectations of, you know, when you first started, and then you decided to work at it and get better and better. But I can see that in just like reviewing your, the things that you've written on your website and for publications, and that there's like a lot of content. You're like, okay, I'm going to write one article for the Morningside. Sorry, I forget the name of the, you know, whatever newspaper.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
I'm going to write one article, then I'm going to write 10 more. You know, you're like, okay. And it's all consistently funny content. Yeah. I can see that work ethic via what you put out there in the world already.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, people always say this, it's just like, but you don't realize it until you actually do it that like there's so much failure involved in doing it. Like, I don't know. Not, at least at this stage for me, I feel like it's like 90% failure and feeling like, that was kind of shitty. And then maybe like one day a month, I feel like, oh, that was a really good performance. Like, I gotta do more of that. And it's like, that's the thing about the progress is it's so not linear and it's so not like every show you get better. Like, so it doesn't feel like it's paying off half the time, you know? Like, you probably know exactly how that feels. It's
100%.
Yeah. Like, sometimes it comes in like sudden spurts. Like, you have breakthroughs and you're like, oh, where was that for the whole past month that I was just like trudging along doing the same shitty performance, you know?
Have you had one of those experiences recently?
Somewhat recent. Actually, I think the night that I met you was sort of a breakthrough night for me.
Joey Bats.
Yeah, Joey Bats. Because I just felt like looser than I normally feel. And like I was more being more present, kind of. And I was like, I got to do that more. But the problem is like you can't always access that on stage, you know, like you're not always in the right mood. And that's what I hate about it is like your performance is so contingent on your mood. At least for me, like I totally feel the difference in myself if I'm like distracted or like preoccupied or something. I'm like, that was so shitty. I wasn't like connecting with people at all.
Right. You're kind of like in your own head thinking about other things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I hate that, but you can't always like force yourself out of that, you know?
Right. You kind of have to like be in the moment of what you are at that moment, right?
Yeah.
Or is there a way to train yourself to like, well, what's the term? Like regulate your emotions or like manage them while you're performing? I guess not really. I don't know.
There might be. I don't know. I really respect. There are some performers that like it seems like they just are so in it and so present every time they perform, and I admire that so much. I'm like, I feel like I'm just like, I don't know. I wish I could have like a stable enough mood to do that.
Well, I mean, maybe that mood could also, or whatever mood you're in, could in some ways feel you showing a different side of yourself, or maybe taking a risk, or maybe taking less of a risk if you're feeling not like open and warm.
Yeah,
maybe you'll take less risk, and the material will be crisper and more polished. I'm just like,
no, that's a really great point.
I mean?
Actually, like you can work with what's there. Always, probably, like,
yeah.
Just like lean into whatever happens to be there. That's a good point.
Like an acting, like use it, whatever it is, just use it. I'm always like, what? No, I guess that is pretty good.
It's advice. A good point, though. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because a lot of things can be funny. You know, like there's so many different personalities that I find funny. I find like people who are really confident performers hilarious and great, and then people who are really like meek and pathetic on stage also hilarious. So it's like, isn't that something that like almost like two opposite things like that can be equally so good for comedy?
Right. You could have like Stephen Wright follow Dane Cook and they both crush in their own way. And it's completely different takes,
yeah.
You know, different personality styles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wait, so you grew up in this coastal town. You said a half hick, half beach town.
Yeah.
Which half were you a hick? Are you a hick, Malia? Dude, this girl's okay.
Is that the vibe you got from me?
No, that I was a hick? In no way.
Yeah.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a sister, an older sister. I never really felt comfortable in California for whatever reason. I think people are very like laid back, relaxed, chilled out. And I always kind of felt more like driven, intense, sort of.
Like New York?
Yeah, like New York. Yeah. So I came here and I was like, oh, everybody's this neurotic? Like, cool. Yeah. Because then it makes you feel more like, I don't know. I just could never relax as much around people that are that happy all the time, I think.
You find it to be kind of boring for yourself?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, boring, or like it makes me feel uneasy somehow. Like, and that's probably a fault of my own that I can't just like be content with life ever. Like, I actually do sort of admire the fact that a lot of the people I knew in California were so like they could just like surf all day and not really worry about anything. But I so feel in myself that like I can't do that. That being around it kind of makes me feel uneasy. So, but being here is like, oh, everybody just fucks. So,
right.
So it's fine. Yeah.
So what specifically about it though? Like, do you just feel like you're not being mentally stimulated or challenged? And that's like, makes you feel like you're just ill at ease.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, it's like, obviously there are so many different parts of California. This is such a generalization,
right?
You know, but I do think the prevailing culture is more like is more just, at least where I grew up was yeah, people were less, a little bit less ambitious and more just like laid back. Like that was like the desirable quality that you looked for in friends, was like this is like the thing people would say is like, are they chill? You'd measure people based on like how chill they were, you know, which is just like not even a value that I have. I don't even judge people by that metric. Like, how chill are they? You know, like none of my friends are chill at all. they're crazy motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but I like that, you know?
So you found non-chill people in the chill place. How'd you find them?
Oh, not in California.
Oh, here you.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I retained one friend from California because we went to school together here. We both went to Columbia. But other than that, I don't know anybody from home anymore.
Was your family like, okay, that's good. Columbia and New York sound like a great place for you? Or were they like, oh my God, this is so far away. We don't want you to leave. Like, how do they handle it?
A little bit of the latter.
Yeah.
A little bit of like, I think they know that like I have that kind of like addictive streak in me, and that I'm sort of attracted to like the more crazy intense shit. So I think that like worries them a little bit, as it probably should.
Not just for like work or creative output, but just overall.
Yeah, just overall. Yeah,
okay.
I do sort of feel, I know it's kind of a tacky thing to say, but like,
well, tacky, why is that tacky?
I do, well, to say that you have like an addictive personality, I'm like, whenever people say that, I'm like, what does that mean? But I do kind of think I have that a little bit.
Really? Like, I don't know, get too personal, but like drugs and alcohol, you don't strike me as someone that drinks a lot.
No, because I am like, I have too many, like I want too many things, like I just know it'll fuck up my life. So I don't do it, but I easily could. Like, I totally get why people do it. Like,
well, the things that you want just to just go at them and like to the exclusion of everything else, like a meth head digging for gold.
Yeah, yeah,
like, that
yeah.
Kind
like,
of just attitude.
Just the mindset of like making one thing everything in your life. Like, I mean, with people, like all of my romantic relationships have been like that, where it's kind of a little bit obsessive and crazy. And with, I mean, I kind of pursue, like, I don't know. I think you have to have a little bit of that in you to, like, pursue stand-up, like, because you have to be doing it like every day, you know. There's and like a lot of the people I talk to in the comedy scene here are, I think, sort of addicted to it, don't you think?
100%.
Yeah.
Me included.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, because like you said, it's like you get the thrill of hopefully it goes well and the crowd likes you, but then you also get the creative, what do you call it, fulfillment and like, you know, meaningfulness of, oh, I came up with an idea and then I made it better over time, and then it killed one night after I worked on it 9 times.
Yeah.
And I did that from scratch. I don't know where. It came out of thin air.
Yeah.
And now it's something that people across various groups will laugh at. That's crazy.
I think, like, how could you not be addicted to that?
Right.
But,
so, yeah. So your friends here are pretty crazy.
Yeah, in an endearing way, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you said that you had that that kind of addictive personality, just because, I mean, I guess I've hung out with you, like, 3 or 4 times. I didn't get that at all. You seem very, like, calm and, like, chill and magnanimous. I, like, just kind of like, oh, nice, you know?
Strangely, it's weird. People always tell me that's their perception of me.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that way inside at all.
Interesting.
Well, yeah.
Maybe it's your social style differs from your inner drivers.
Yeah, that might be a good way of putting it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, maybe it's the California sort of way of interacting kind of rubbed off on me.
Right.
Where I seem chill, but I'm not.
But not actually.
But I'm not actually.
maybe you got that California foundation, but that New York present.
Yeah, it could
be. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
Feels weird. It feels weird to talk about my own personality this much. I'm like, who gives a fuck about this?
No, I think a lot of people will give a fuck about it.
I don't know, man.
What I was gonna say is that the underlying, you know, one of the underlying pieces of your life. This is my, you know, layman's outside perspective. I don't know you very well,
sure.
But
yeah.
From what I can tell, you seem like you're really, really smart. Thus, if you have that angsty drive, quote unquote, I'm paraphrasing, like you can use your mind and some mental discipline to channel that in the right way. You know, like, I think you're a pretty mentally disciplined person, right? And being smart, it helps you be mentally disciplined, right?
I think I am in my, like, better phases of life. I definitely have, like I told you, I feel like you can let, like, the addictive side of your personality kind of get away from you, which I have done in the past, even like with people, like I said, like I've had some kind of crazy unhealthy relationships because of that.
Let's dive into those and mention them by name. I'm kidding.
Cause it's so fun, you know, to have to like, to be crazy with someone is fun.
To be crazy with someone is fun.
It's so fun. There's nothing like it. And you can be like, and then you get out of it and you're like, I'm gonna be healthy now and just like go for runs and like, and then you're kind of like, this sucks, this is not fun. Like, I prefer the other thing a little bit.
Yeah,
so but yeah, but it's like, you know, like you said, it's like a double-edged sword. Like, it is totally what drives me with ambition and like with school at one point in my life and now with stand-up, but it also is like, I feel the danger of it. Like, I feel how it can get you into trouble if you don't find a way to contain it and like maintain some sense of stability in your life.
Right, right. But yeah, I mean, to that like yin and yang element, like there is, it's interesting when you said that when you're on the healthy side then you miss it, like, there's something to be said for that intense passion, even though it has its flaws and downfalls. It still is like, I don't want to go through life just like, oh, I'm 100% at, you know, baseline all the time. And I don't make any mistakes of passion, but I'm also completely boring. Like, you know, like, it's good to have that edgy passion involved in your life too, right?
Yeah, I sort of think so, for sure.
Yeah. But the relationship thing is interesting too, because I had like a really intense relationship, and I was like, I just remember like looking back, like one morning I woke up and I was like, I just want to apologize about how I acted last night. Like, I was just so mad and like, just like, you know, like,
not,
like, it was like a movie, you know, like, just like too like dramatic. in my expression of emotion. You know, just like, Danny, just fucking relax.
Did you feel like it was out of character of you?
A little
to
bit.
Do
I mean,
that?
We were definitely like drinking a lot too, so that was, yeah. So that was a part of it. But she goes, I don't think that was either one of our best nights.
Yeah,
it's a nice thing to say.
It is because some people stir it up in you, though. It's like, you know, That's the thing.
And then when you get in those intense relationships, I don't know your experience has been, but then it's like you stir their pot and they stir your pot, and then you both become experts at stirring each other's pots over time. And then it just becomes this cauldron, seething cauldron of passion and shittiness.
And that's what makes it so much harder to get out of, because you're like so perfectly terrible for each other, you know?
Yep. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, you know, what's the alternative? You're like, you're with somebody. I always like that Louis C.K. bit where he goes, what's the different ways that your life could go? You meet somebody, you get divorced after 3 years, you die alone, that sucks. Meet somebody, goes pretty well, and then you grow very close together, and you learn and grow and change together, and your lives become like tree trunk or like roots of a tree, interconnected, until you learn so much from them, and they learn, and you become them, and they become you, and then at the end, one of you dies, one of you dies, and that's best case scenario.
Yeah, I love like the always with the fatalistic shit.
Right.
That's so true, though.
It's true.
So it's like, what are you going to do with this short period of time that we have?
Right.
Yeah.
It's good that you have that perspective on it. I know you're young. Like, I guess, I don't know. I guess that's patronizing to say that to you, but I don't know. I don't know how
no,
many
you're
people
right.
Your age
I am.
Have, like,
I well, kind of... I don't know. I don't feel like, I definitely don't feel wise. I feel like I'm so, this year more than any year of my life, I feel like I don't know anything. I don't know at all. But you know, I'm just trying what I feel like feels right at any given moment, you know.
You feel like this year you don't know because of like the pandemic and how it's dramatically altered everything, or just like something else?
I don't know. I don't know what it is, honestly. Yeah. Whenever like people say, I'm always hesitant to blame things on COVID, because I know it did change all of our lives, but I almost feel like it's low-hanging fruit sometimes to be like, oh, you know, the pandemic, because, like, could have been that, or could have just been that me being just, like, me being a little bit fucked, like I generally am. So I don't know what it is, but specifically this year, I feel like really, like, I have no idea what direction my life is going to go in.
Right. Well, you're relatively fresh out of school too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you feel a pressure to know where your life should go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
From yourself, your friends and family, society, all three?
I guess mostly myself. And just being in proximity to a lot of my friends from school, I kind of envy that they have more conventional career paths and they have like such a clear direction right now. Like they're like going to work at think tanks and they're going to like, I don't know, like do foreign policy or whatever the fuck. But it's like there's such a clear thing, like grad school and then internships and then like start working at the place you intern at. There's just like such a clear process of like how to get to where they want to be in their careers, and they like have that laid out for them kind of already. But with pursuing like a career in entertainment is like, I don't know, just kind of be around clubs and see who you run into. It's like, okay. Yeah, basically. Yeah, right. and that's what like all like older comics have told me. And I think they're right. But if you're like someone who's uncomfortable with uncertainty at all, like that's a little bit terrifying. It's like, well, I don't know how long that's gonna take, or like, you know, and also just like keeping yourself like mentally healthy and generally happy throughout it all, I feel like it's so hard. I mean, again, I don't want to act like I even know that much about it, because I'm still so new, but it's like already I feel like, okay, I need to like take breaks sometimes because this shit gets so hard, you know?
Right. And then it's also a field that draws in abnormal people that are like, you know, maybe suffer with mental health or just are live more of an untethered life than yeah. the other people we're talking about. And it's like,
yeah.
so you've got an uncertain profession with a lot of unstable people in the uncertain profession.
It's yeah.
challenging, you know?
It's totally...
I'm not trying to shit on comics, but that is a factor, you know?
No, it's totally a, like, chicken and egg thing. It's like, does comedy make you depressed, or do depressed people do comedy? Maybe a little bit of both, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, do you feel like... I don't think I've ever been depressed. I've definitely been sad about things. I don't think I've ever been depressed. You feel like you've been depressed? If that's too personal, just...
No, it's not too personal.
Next question, Palmer.
No, what? I mean, I don't know. I don't know about clinically. Like, yeah. maybe. I don't really think I'm like a generally happy person. I think I'm more unhappy than happy. So I don't know if you would call that depressed.
It's like 55-45.
Like 60-40 maybe. 60-40.
You're adding about 5% to the depression factor.
Even yeah. And to be honest, I don't know that comedy has really been helping with that.
Right. Do you have a day job too?
I write right now. I write for a magazine.
That's awesome.
So yeah, so that's kind of the day job, but. Pretty soon, I think I'm going to start just, like, working a restaurant job because I think that would be smarter, like, economically speaking, even though it's not... I'm not, like, writing or necessarily doing, like... It's not as close to the work I want to be doing, but it just... You just make so much more money working a restaurant job. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm above that kind of work right now, you know?
Right.
Like...
I mean, yeah, I worked in restaurants. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great way to learn about life and learn social skills and learn about the range of people. Have you worked in a restaurant before?
No, I haven't. Yeah, so.
It's definitely a good experience.
It's time.
But I also feel like you're writing. It's great that you have a writing job because you're a great writer. So I'm just, you know, speaking off the cuff, but I feel like, I don't want you to not have the writing job.
Yeah, but it's at a certain point, it's just like, does this make sense to do, you know? Like,
yeah.
Write little articles about, like, I don't know.
The cafeteria food at Columbia?
Oh, you read my website?
I see, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, when it comes down to it, that's not, like, really the writing I want to be doing, and I make so little that it's just, like, would make more sense to be waiting tables, you know?
Right. But you could do other jobs too.
You could.
Yeah, why don't you just go down my path and do corporate recruiting for 21 years and then neither succeed at a high level in the corporate world or in the comedy world and just stay frozen in amber between the two worlds until you want to fucking kill yourself.
That sounds great. And you've never been depressed, you said?
No, I know. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, well, I think that you have a better career trajectory than I had. When I was, well, I didn't even start comedy until I was probably like 10 years older than you are now. But, but I don't know. I just feel like we said this at Blackout the other night. I feel like your comedy trajectory is going to be great because you're young, you're smart, you're funny, you're female. That's like, industry loves that.
I hope so, man. I don't know. I'm still so, half the time when I go to clubs and stuff, I feel like, it's just a little bit overwhelmed and like I'm just learning so much about the industry, like just listening to older comics mansplain to me. But it's like I'll take the mansplaining right now. I don't know, you know. Like,
do they do it in a mansplaining way? Like,
not always.
Yeah,
no, honestly. Well, yeah, no, a lot of the older comics have been really helpful to me, like given me a lot of wise advice at this point, I feel like.
What's some of the wise advice that they've given you?
Someone told me a few weeks ago, like, I remember he put it, he was like, when you're writing, well, first of all, he was like, learn the structure, you know, like, don't think you're above conventionality, which I sort of already came to on my own, like, when I first started. Like, I feel like everyone starts comedy thinking like, oh, I'm just like so, I just have my own style, you know, and then you're like, okay, I actually need to learn how to write a joke. And then I can venture out a little and start to figure out what my style is. But I'm not, like, nobody is above, like, joke format, you know? Like, you still have to be have some sense of conventionality to your writing. So he said that. And then he also said, like, when you write, like, follow the emotion of, like what moves you. Like, what do you care about? And I think about that now when I write a lot because it's, like, it's so easy to fall into, like, especially when you're doing a lot of open mics, to fall into just, like, kind of hacky, like, maybe this will get a laugh, like to kind of think of it in the sense of, like, maybe they'll like this and kind of just keep trying shit. But then it's, like, what is the point of doing this if, like, if I don't even enjoy saying it? Like, so I think about that a lot now when I write, like, what is, like... It's like when you spend so much time writing comedy, I feel like it's easy to lose touch with your own sense of humor even. And like, what do I even find funny, you know? So I think of him saying like, follow the emotion a lot, which I think is an interesting way of conceptualizing comedy, like that it is like at its core an emotional thing, you know, like you're being moved. Like when you laugh, like you're being moved by something, you know, and it's never like, Like something I hate is like when you do a joke and you get the kind of like kind of laugh where people are like, oh, nice, I see what you did there, but it doesn't like do anything for them. Like that's like what I want to start doing less and less of, you know.
Yep. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it about the emotion driving it. I mean, it's true, you know. Like George, I always said this, George Shapiro, Jerry Seinfeld's agent or manager or something, agent I guess, I don't know. Manager said the best comics in the world get their material from their heart and soul.
Yeah.
And that's driven by the emotion of what you were just saying.
Yeah,
you know?
That makes total sense. I mean, but again, that's like, it's so hard to maintain that while also dealing with like all the pressure and the intense and ambition and drive of like, I just want to make it. I want to get club spots. And like you can feel it when you talk to people. Like, you can just, like, feel the hunger in their eyes, you know? And it's, like, I feel like...
Especially the bad comics.
Especially the bad comics. Oh, God. I think all of the comics, to
true.
Be honest, including myself. Oh, really? Yeah. You don't think so?
I think there's a fair number of comics that are stable and aren't just, like, completely thirsty all the time, you know?
That's probably true. Yeah. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. You have to have that ambition and that desire to get somewhere, to... go somewhere, right?
I'm not saying everyone's willing to sell out. I'm just saying I, like, you can feel that intense drivenness in everybody and how just, like, I mean, why would you not? Everyone just wants spots. Like, that's all you want. But it's, like, it's so hard to, like, to kind of, like, maintain a sense of, like, okay, why am I even doing this in the first place? Like, you know?
Right. I always said, like, Amy Poehler. Did you read her book? Yes, please?
No, I have. I want to. I know people love it.
She has this great quote in there about, like, your comedy career is like your mean ex-boyfriend who doesn't call you back or hurts your feelings, but your creativity is like a Hispanic grandmother that bakes you cookies.
Nice. Interesting enough. Yeah. I mean, I would have to hear, like, the end of that analogy, but I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that's consistent with how I feel about it.
Because, like, you know, going to comedy clubs and like trying to figure out who the booker is and, you know, networking to get spots, it's like, that's the mean ex-boyfriend stuff. But when you're like thinking about your emotions and how to express that, when you're writing and just thinking about
what you find funny, just kind of have to separate the two, and you're like, especially because, like, before you're, like, anyone who's known, it's, like, you're kind of, like, your own, like, agent and manager. So it's, like, you take all the brunt of that, like dealing with bookers and shit, you know? So I guess you kind of just have to separate like your business self from your creative self, which is not always easy to do for me, you know?
Because if you're presenting your, if you're presenting your creative self in a business environment, what would that look like?
I just wouldn't, I mean, there's a certain amount of like dishonesty involved in like making connections, you know, and like schmoozing with people that like my creative self kind of hates. Like I kind of feel gross doing that in a way, you know, even though that's, there's nothing inherently bad about it. It's like, that's what you got to do. Everyone understands it. Like you got to meet people. And, but I just like the whole networky thing just like feels disingenuous. And I like my creative self has an aversion to that. You know what I mean?
It feels like phony, right?
Yeah. It feels phony. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and especially with comics, it's like, I feel like a lot of us, like we have a very specific hatred of phoniness. Like that's like a lot of what comedy is like calling out phoniness, you know? But then yet here we are like in the club being like, oh, hey man, like great set, like to everyone, you know? It's like there's cognitive dissonance a little bit.
I've never thought of it in that way. That's totally true.
It is true, I think.
Yeah.
And you do it and it's like you cringe as you say it. You're like, oh, fuck. I'm doing this thing, okay.
I'm doing the thing that I mock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You become the guy that you hate.
Like, right. And like some comics, this always like gets under my skin. I can see them on Twitter, and what a coincidence. So you're a comic and you want to advance in the ranks, and then the only people that you interact with on Twitter are comics that are farther along than you.
Yeah. Oh,
that's interesting. Those just happen to be the ones whose tweets you find are interesting. You're not social climbing in any way.
Yeah, there's
you just,
so much.
Just so happen to like all the A comics the most on Twitter versus other people.
Yeah, I know. Oh. And that's where it becomes like so gatekeepy, where it's like people are only makes me think of the Louis thing of like how guys only fuck up instead of like down or across. Like comics only interact up, you know what I mean? Like they only like are really interested in people who are like more far along than they are.
Yeah,
you know.
The thing at like a comedy club party, like you're talking to somebody. I mean, I've been guilty of myself, I'm not gonna lie to you. You're talking to somebody.
Yeah, same. That's what feels gross about
it.
Yeah.
More interesting or like is a bigger person deal. And
yeah,
like,
you do like the
talk to them and yeah. stuff. You kind of suck.
You do like the darty eye thing where you're like, oh, who's that? It's like, oh, god damn,
I wish. Do that.
Yeah, that's like such a gross quality, you know? Like,
right.
I don't want to become that.
Right. I want to be sincere.
Yeah.
I feel like over time, you just, if you, you know, you're, I mean, you're clearly like in it for the long haul, right? I don't see you like.
I feel like it. I feel like I. It's happening. I have no control over it, man.
Right. But because of that, I think over time it's just like you go to so many shows and so many events and so many comedy club parties that like, like who you actually are just becomes very apparent. You know, you can't even be funny if you try.
Hopefully, I mean, yeah. Hopefully, I want to maintain like a sense of self. That's the main thing. That because I like you said like I feel it in myself and I feel it like that's what I want to avoid more than anything is like how to like just feel like I have like integrity still while like still networking and all that, you know.
Yeah,
without feeling like I'm going up to bookers like, oh hey man, like
hey, man.
I don't know why that's the thing that I always think of when I think of like ass kissing. Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Maybe that's because, I don't know.
California?
That's how Californians kiss ass. Is, hey, man.
Hey, man. What's up, dude?
Yeah. Great set. You were awesome.
Yeah. You in particular, that book's comedy juice happened to be great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like that as a person. So I think that'll help. That's going to help, right? And that you aren't that. You're not an insincere, phony social climber. You're pretty, I mean, from what I've seen, you're honest and sincere and direct. You're not like a fucking.
Yeah, but then you have people telling you like, oh, you just kind of need to do that, which, and I don't know how true that is. Like, Because in some sense, it feels like bookers are almost like looking for you to do that. It's like a rite of passage thing. Like they're kind of just like waiting for you to do that so they can then give you, you know what I mean?
What they want. They want you to be like schmoozy and
yeah,
funny.
Sort of. It's like, they want it's you like to play you have game. To degrade yourself a little bit for them to see that you're serious about it or kind of.
I hope not. That's whack.
Maybe not. Maybe that's cynical. I don't know.
Has that been your experience with bookers you've interacted with?
A little bit, but maybe that's my own fault that I'm interpreting it that way. Like maybe there's a way to be more real and still like network kind of, but I don't know.
Also there's a wide range of personalities. Bookers have a wide range of personalities, right? So I'm sure there are some that fit that category where they want you to like schmooze and like, oh, was like kiss the golden ring.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's definitely, because a lot of bookers are like comics that didn't make it in stand up and they're like, oh, I want some power in the industry.
Yeah.
So they see themselves as above comics and you need to like bow prostrate in front of them.
It feels like that sometimes. And it's like, I don't want to have like, I hate when comics have like so much pride at this level where they're like, oh, I would never do a bringer show. Like, I would never degrade myself like this. It's like, well, we're kind of desperate at this point. Like, accept the reality of your situation. Like I don't feel like I'm above anything right now, but it's also, like, just, like, person to person. I hate the feeling of kissing someone's ass, you know? Like, it's not like I feel, like, career-wise or talent-wise, I'm above it. I just, like, it makes me feel so gross inside, you know?
Right. It's like, do I want the reward this gets? Because I'm not going to be, I can't look at myself in the mirror after
yes,
I do this.
Yes, exactly. It's like, then it's not even fucking worth it. And then I'm going to go on stage and be like, hey, man.
Hey, man. What's up? You guys want to book me?
Yeah. And sometimes it feels like you do certain shows and it feels like, are they losing respect for me that I even am here? You know what I mean? It's like a catch 22 almost. It's like, or I don't know if catch 22. So it's like a lose-lose. It's like you want to do the show to like get in with them, but then it's like you feel like they kind of look down on you for even falling for their like whole system a little bit.
Jesus, that's interesting.
Maybe that's too cynical. I don't know. I don't know anything. Like I said, I really don't know anything. Like,
are you talking about like a booker for like a bringer show where they're
have
to do something to get the stage time.
Yeah.
It's not just like, oh, hey, Malia, you're really funny. Will you do my show?
Exactly. But again, it's like, I don't feel like I'm like, I know where I stand. Like, I don't think like I deserve so much at this point. Like, I don't think I'm above doing it. It's just that I don't want, like, dynamic wise, I feel like, can they tell that this is shameful that I'm doing this?
This is shameful.
Yeah.
Right. It'd be fun. It's interesting. I always think like, what if you said it to them? Like, do you know, I realize this is somewhat shameful. No, I guess that would be insulting to their show, right?
That's the thing. Like, you have to be like, this is awesome when you go.
Thanks, man. My five people are on their way.
Yeah, I don't have any concerns about this at all. Like, I'm I'm totally content with doing this for the rest of my career. I just love this club and this show so much.
Yeah. I love convincing five of my friends to show up at a certain time and spend like
$60.
But I'm not going to reimburse them for it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. At least with comedy friends, it's like you're paying it forward. Like you do theirs and they do yours, 100%. Kind of thing. Like I don't really mind going to other people's bringer shows because I'm like, I get it, man. Like,
yeah. And you can learn from watching all stand up. I feel, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even if maybe some of those comics in those shows are great, and even if they're not great, you can still learn. Like, oh, that was a mistake. Wouldn't do that, you know. It's good to watch all kinds of stand up.
True.
What were you gonna say?
The hard thing is like, if you watch a lot of bad stand up, I feel like it like can make you depressed about stand up in general. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you just feel like, ugh.
And you can see like the same kind of like bad performers kind of running in packs and not doing
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds mean, but
no,
it's just kind of true. Like birds of a feather, they kind of do stick together.
And kind of just like not getting better, you know?
Yeah, doing the and same like, act over and over.
Like, I really feel like I don't have any judgment for like, I know there's like all levels of like your progress in stand-up, and I was definitely really bad at one point, so I could never judge like being a super beginner, you know? But it's like what makes me really depressed is like people who like never really progress because they are always like blaming the crowd and just being like defensive and having fragile egos, you know? I feel like that shit is like, you gotta get rid of that shit like so fast if you want to get better, you know? Like, you just have to be like, every time you have to like turn yourself over to the crowd and be like, okay, they didn't like it, what did I do wrong, you know? At like at this level, at least, you can't be like, oh, well, they didn't understand me, you know? It's like, come on, dude.
That is literally my worst pet peeve.
It's my biggest pet peeve.
I hate it. They're like, oh, I guess you guys...
Oh, you got...
yeah, they in particular. Oh, if you do a joke about, like, cows. Oh, I guess you guys don't like cow material,
Big cow fans in the crowd.
Like funny cow
jokes.
No,
You
just sucked at that one.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't funny, like...
yeah, it's
you should
fault.
Always think that before anything else. Is that okay? The joke wasn't funny because it's like,
yeah,
you see from like watching pro shows, it's like we were talking about earlier, like people laugh at any type of comedy, really. Like, people laugh at edgy comedy and clean comedy and like absurd comedy, as long as it's funny. It's like that's all it takes. So it's like to blame it on the crowd just like not getting it is like, oh, you gotta not do that. You gotta rid yourself of that so early on, I think.
Yeah, and then it's like a minefield that they're setting for themselves too, because now you've told now you've insulted the audience's intelligence.
Yeah, you're alienating them even more.
Yeah,
and it's like, yeah, I hate that shit.
You just told them that they don't get what funny is.
Yep.
And then you want them to embrace your version of funny after you told them that?
Yes.
Well, if you don't believe our judgment, then why would we laugh at your jokes?
Yeah, totally.
Or why would it matter if we laugh at your jokes? Because we don't get it.
Totally.
What?
And it's like, you're the entertainer. Like, your job is to just, is to be funny. Your job isn't to like, it's not their job to laugh at you, you know? Like, that's not what's expected of them. Like, the audience comes and like, they can do whatever they want. Like, it's like the burden is on you to be good, you know?
Yeah. I read some quote, it's like, treat the audience like they're poets and kings and they will act in kind or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You can't assume that a group of people is. I hate when people are like, oh, that crowd sucks. That crowd is not smart. I'm like, a random collection of 30 people isn't smart? Like, that is not smart to say that.
I know,
what's not smart.
And it's like... Yeah, totally. And it's like, for me, I think like most, if not all of the comedians who are like super famous and have super made it, it totally makes sense. Like, public opinion totally checks out in that sense to me. It's like there's a reason the things that are the most popular are the most popular. You know, it's like I actually think public opinion is like correct, kind of, like, you know, in general.
Yeah, like Dua Lipa is the greatest.
I know. How long is it gonna take for you to bring Dua Lipa into the conversation?
We didn't even make it an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, but exactly, it's true, though.
Yeah what were we gonna say?
It's like I think that with pop music too, it's like people shit on pop music like, oh, it's just shitty, like people have bad taste. It's like, well, no, there's like something good about it if that many people like it, you know. And I think that about like really big comedians. I'm like, they're clearly like really talented, all the ones that are really big, and they're clearly, even if it's not my style, like they're clearly excellent performers and like know how to work an audience so well. So it's not like random who ends up being really big, you know.
Yeah, like the cream rises to the top.
Yeah, I think that in comedy, and it's like, yeah. Which is like, it's totally, I really think it's a meritocracy, like 100%, which is like, in a way that's scary, because if you don't make it, then it's like, you find out exactly how untalented you are. Like,
Right, right.
It's like there's real meaning behind that if you don't make it, you know, because it is a meritocracy. But on the other hand, it's like glass half full. It's a little bit like, oh, well, I don't have to stress so much about trying to be at the right place at the right time at every given moment. I can kind of have a little more faith that, like, if I get better, that things might just work out, you know, and that, like, that'll speak for itself if I do get to a level that's good enough for, like, that to be the case, you know?
Yeah.
Like, another thing that and like an older, wiser comic told me the other day was like, he was like, get undeniable, like get that good. And it's like, I think that's so true. Like you don't want to have to rely on having to convince people that you're so good and that like they should give you spots. Like ideally it's like you should just like work on your material so much that you're so good that it just happens for you, you know?
Yeah.
Like that should be the goal, I think.
If you're consistently murdering all the time, people are gonna notice.
No one's gonna be like, yeah, oh yeah, exactly. Which obviously like I'm not there yet, but I would like, I feel like it's so easy to get caught up in focusing on like, how do I like climb the club scene and like kind of like work my way in, when it's like that like takes energy away from actually focusing on like the raw just getting better, you know, like,
yeah,
which is the hardest but also most rewarding part about it.
Right. Yeah. And like, also it's like a matter of time too, right? You got to get so many reps in over like years and like,
yeah,
sooner or later, like you're just going to become, not you, but if a comic over time performs over and over, they're going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I can say, it's interesting because you were like, well, the measure of success being making it, like, I feel like how many comics in the world are going to get to like Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld, Sarah Silverman? Like, how do you define making it? What does that mean exactly? Do you have to make $100,000 a year or more doing stand-up? Do you have to tour? Do you have to sell out Madison Square Garden? Like, how is that defined? How would you define
it?
Yeah,
I don't know. Not like Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld. I wouldn't call making it. I mean, that's like ultra celebrity status comedian. I don't know.
Right.
Making it, I kind of think of making it as like being able to support yourself doing comedy, like having a career where you're like consistently getting gigs at like good clubs, maybe.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe the answer is like, I would think at every different level, your definition of that changes if you're a driven person. Like probably people performing at the Cellar right now are like,
we're at a coffee shop and they're closing in 15 minutes.
We'll
wrap up soon. Go ahead.
Yeah. Probably people performing at the Cellar now like don't feel like they have made it, some of them, who, because they aren't like known, quote-unquote known comedians yet. But like to people at this level, like that's kind of like you have this feeling that like, oh, once I get there, then I'll be chill and I'll be like content and I won't really like need more. But that probably isn't true.
Yeah.
If I think realistically about it.
Right.
Like you're probably always going to be dissatisfied.
Yeah. Then Kevin Hart shows up and bumps you.
So yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. You know. Exactly. Then you get put in your place once again and it's like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm nothing.
Oh, I'm nothing.
Yeah.
I like that phrase, there are always greater and lesser people than yourself. Like, no matter what, like, even the CEO reports to the board of directors.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You know, Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld are amazing, but they're also in their 50s, you know?
Yeah.
And their process of making it is behind them. I'm sure there's a million things that if they were sitting here, they'd be like, this sucks about my life. And you, on the other hand, are young, have your whole life ahead of you. You get to have all those experiences of growing up, not growing up, like rising up is the word, through the scene, through the ranks. So like that's exciting in a way that they that they can't have an exciting life.
I would still trade with Chris Rock.
You're like, I'll take the fucking mansion in Jersey.
Yeah, I'll take the $1 billion net worth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to do is not great because I'm comparing, but I don't know.
I know what you mean. It's probably you can't see the value in it while you're in it sort of thing. Like, you just, like, right now I just feel so stressed and consumed by, like, my anxieties about it, you know, like, about, like, not being successful and stuff, that I can't really appreciate, like, kind of, like, all the excitement, like you said, in, like, the ooh, what if kind of phase, you know?
Right. Because you feel that pressure to rise to the ranks.
Yeah, and also because I know that, like, I definitely feel like I have, like, a lot to prove right now, even to my family, you know, because I know that they don't really get it, quote unquote. You don't get it, Mom. But it's like, they kind of are like, well, it's a toss up what she's doing. So I kind of feel like, well, fuck you, I can make it. Like, even though I don't know, I don't know at all, but I have my own doubts about myself, obviously, but I feel like I have, like, a lot to prove to them, you know, like, which is sort of silly, but that's...
It's like an added layer of expectations on top of your own, which, based on what you're saying today, are pretty high in themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I just feel like, what the fuck do I know? I guess when you say this stuff, I'm like, oh, what the fuck am I doing? I'm fucking 45. Like, I guess I'm a club comic, but I'm not, like, passing the cellar. I'm not getting spots at Gotham. Like, it's like, well, then have I not made it? I'm like, I have a good job, and I get the best of both worlds. And then I'm like, well, maybe I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But I guess the answer is just, like, just keep trying every day, right? Sounds like you're doing the right things.
It depends. I guess it depends on the person. Like, if you personally feel content, then that is all that should matter for you, right? Yeah. Like,
we're all gonna be dead for eternity, so
yep.
You can't be angsty the whole time we're here.
Touche.
You know? Did you say touche?
Yeah.
Touche.
Yeah.
Fuck, what was I gonna say? Oh, there was some quote we were talking about earlier about comics that aren't great and don't realize they're not good. It's like this Harvard Business Review did this study and they determined that people that are bad at a skill are also bad at...
I saw that.
They're bad at evaluating others, and they're bad at evaluating themselves. Thus, it's a dual curse.
Yeah.
The inability to recognize talent and to self-evaluate.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me.
Right?
Like, just the
you
thing...
You saw that?
Yeah, I did. Like, just the thing that makes you bad is also the thing that makes you bad at like, realizing that you're bad.
Right.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah. And when you read stuff like that and you're like, shit, was that me?
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, because they don't think it's that, like,
they didn't indicate who's in who.
What is the percentage of people that think they're great? Like, I don't know. There's also that study that is what, like, 80% of people think that they're above average intelligence or something like that. And then all of us sit here like, well, I'm not the 80, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm the percentage that is really above average, but. How would we know if we're not?
If everybody thinks the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw that exact thing, but it's something like at Kellogg at Northwestern, this professor gave it to his class, a survey to his class about how well they're strong in communication skills, and like 95% of them thought their communication skills were above average.
Yep.
That's like, no, that's impossible.
Yep. Kind of scary if you think about it.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you could wave a magic wand and have the career that you wanted, what would that look like? The career and the life that you wanted, not just career. Oh. The warm Hispanic grandmother and the mean ex-boyfriend. Best of both worlds.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't even know what I feel like what I want now is I might, like, if I got it, I might end up, like, killing myself later on. Not literally, like, not to be morbid, but, like, my point is I'm always, like, changing what I want so rapidly that I don't know if this will remain true in the coming years, but right now I would love to just, like, do comedy for the rest of my life and be able to like make a living doing it and like be able to like write for television maybe from doing it. Like that would also be awesome. That's also something I've kind of been wanting to do for like sort of my whole life. But it's, again, it's like such a hard industry to break into that I feel like kind of just like trying from all ends, you know, and like seeing what works. But yeah, you know what would be awesome is like, I know that this is like sort of the dream job of every comedian, but what would be awesome is writing for late night, because you make a ton of money doing that and it's fulfilling work. Like you're writing jokes, and it's like the job stability is so good. Like, what is like, I mean, I guess Conan just did get canceled, but how often does that happen? Late night shows are on like forever. So you could, and then you could do that and then do stand up on the side. Like that would be, you talk about like ideal life and career. Maybe that would be it for me.
Well, didn't you intern at the Samantha Bee show?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Is that where you, where I'm part of what, I mean, obviously you know about that in general, but what did that really like whet your appetite for that career?
Yeah, totally. I was like, yeah, I talked to the writers a lot and I was like, oh my God, this is what I want to do. Like this would be, I was like, they were like telling us about their jobs and I was like, my mouth was watering. I was like, that's such a dream. Like you get to make money just like writing jokes and like, especially with a late night show, it's like, there's like a specific style that you learn how to write in. So it's, cause with stand-up, like there's can be a little bit of, there's like an added component of like, well, what is my persona and what kind of jokes do I make? You know, but when you write for late night, it's like, that is all prescribed already. Like your persona is, Colbert's persona or Samantha Bee's persona, you know, it's like,
you like that?
Yeah, I think there's
somewhat limiting though too, isn't it?
It is, but if you do stand up on the side, that's why I feel like that could be totally fulfilling, because then you can like have like full throttle self expression with your own material, but then have the more like kind of like the comfort and the structure of like a more like prescribed way of writing jokes for someone else. I mean, that sounds awesome, and then you're making money doing it, so it's like. You know?
Right.
And you can, the main thing is like a job, like a writing job like that, I feel like I would be able to relax a little more about stand up. Like, oh, okay, I don't need this. Like I've already gotten something that I want, so I can chill out a little bit.
Right. And still know? Be like using your creative mind all day.
Yeah. And I could actually maybe feel like more creative because I wasn't so like pressured all the time, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm being contrarian right now, but in my head, I'm just thinking, well, but you're funny on your own. Like, I feel like it would be almost like a limiting aspect of your talents if you're just writing for somebody else that isn't you. I'm not disparaging late night. I mean, obviously I would take that job in a heartbeat, but
yeah,
I don't know. I just feel like there's this like, oh, the industry, we bow to the industry. They have the best opportunities. It's like, dude, I don't know. I feel like there's,
yeah,
like, just, I don't know. You start a podcast. I don't know. I guess I'm like in this like, Joe Rogan.
Well, I would want to do things.
But I think like, he's right. Like, just if you make your own shit, that's gonna be the, isn't that the best, to make your own shit?
Yeah, I mean, I really
networks are all dying anyways.
What? I really like that way of thinking, and I like,
yeah,
like the romantic in me kind of wants to think that way, and just like, well, I want to say what I want to say, you know, and I don't want to be like stick it to the man, you know. But it's also like, well, but I need to make money,
right?
So it's like
dream to some extent.
You kind of have to like. To like adjust your, like, you know, you like temper your idealism with like the reality of the world and the industry and all that, and it's like,
that's true.
I'm not saying I would be like completely fulfilled writing for late night, but if I think I would be happy enough doing it, like where I was still like working that same muscle that stand up is, and then like as long as I got to do like the more creative thing on the side.
Why don't you get those Samantha Bee writers to hook it up?
Dude, I would if I could.
Well, you know
trust
them, right?
Me. Sort of. Like,
yo,
sort of,
dude.
But, yeah, but,
hey, man. Hey, man.
we better wrap this up.
Yeah.
I feel, what do you want to say your social media handles? I thought that laugh was a good thing to end on, too.
Yeah, that was a good. And that's got the hey, man motif.
The hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man. With hey, man. Simon.
Yeah, I'm just Malia Simon on Instagram, MaliaSimon. And then...
Your website's great, too.
My website, just MaliaSimon.com. There's, like, comedy content on there. Those are really the only things that matter that I have. Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing this podcast. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You got a great...
Been really fun.
Future ahead of you. I'm glad we met.
Me too.
Seriously.
Yeah, had a great time today.
Thanks, me too. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Sure.
See you later, you fucking gins. Oh, wait, actually, I won't make you do this, but sometimes, usually if it's a guy guest, I'm like, do you want to end by doing sex sounds? And I did that with my friend Hannah once, and then she just started making sounds as though like she was like
a Harry Met Sally kind of.
Oh, no, like she was like, no, like, oh, like, dude, Hannah, don't do that. Jesus Christ. Anyways, I'm not going to put you through that.
All right, cool.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night.